concern for his Burmese friends and colleagues, you know, Aung San Suu Kyi and all his colleagues.
Myanmar troubles continue. It's Tuesday, February 23rd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, India and China cool in the snow, a climate change in policy, the COVID fight broadens, cloning diamonds, and stiff person syndrome. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Australia says it has serious concerns about an economic advisor to Myanmar's former de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi, who has been detained by police. The military overthrew the elected government in the Southeast Asian nation on February 1st, alleging fraud in a November 8th poll. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has more.
Sean Turnell, an Australian academic, has been a key economic aide to Myanmar's de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi. Her National League for Democracy party won a landslide victory in an election last November with more than 80% of the vote. Suu Kyi and Turnell have been detained, along with others, by the military, which seized power in Myanmar. Turnell is an associate economics professor at Sydney's Macquarie University. Its website says he's away for an extended period after taking up the post of senior economic advisor to the government of Myanmar. In a message to the Reuters news service, he said he was fine and strong and not guilty of anything, along with a smile emoji. Earlier he wrote on Twitter that the military takeover was gut-wrenching and heartbreaking and an utter catastrophe for the economy. Australian Foreign Affairs Minister Maurice Payne said in a statement, her government was deeply concerned about reports of Australian and other foreign nationals being detained arbitrarily in Myanmar. Myanmar's ambassador to Canberra has been called in by the federal government. Tim Harcourt from the University of New South Wales Business School is a friend of Turnell's.
I was talking to Sean the day before, or a couple of days before, when the coup had happened, and I was basically saying to him, listen, mate, you better get out of there, you know, be safe, you know. And he seemed more concerned for his Burmese friends and colleagues, you know, Aung San Suu Kyi and all his colleagues. He said, no, he's fine, he's been treated well, he's all fine. And then the next day I heard he was detained. DFAT had arranged for Sean to fly out and they were about to accompany him to the airport and basically the military got there first.
Myanmar was controlled by a repressive military government from 1962 to 2011. A government effectively led by Suu Kyi came to power after elections in 2015. The overthrow of her administration prompted thousands of people to gather in Yangon, the nation's biggest city, to condemn the military takeover and demand the release of their elected leaders. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. United Nations chief demands immediate return to democratic rule in Myanmar. UN and rights groups pan Malaysia's plans to deport Myanmar nationals. Gunmen kill four female social workers in Pakistan. India and China border disputes persist despite troop pullback. China steps up focus on food security in major policy document. You'll find much more on all these stories when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and stop by the voanews.com website. This is VOA Asia. Indian and Chinese troops have withdrawn from a disputed border that triggered a nine-month-long standoff between the two countries, but rebuilding ties will not be easy as disputes linger. However, trade ties between the two large Asian economies are expected to improve Anjana Pasricha joins us from New Delhi with details.
Chinese and Indian artillery and tanks have rolled back, and soldiers have retreated from the banks of the strategic Pangong Lake, which straddles their border in the Himalayas. In video released on the pullback, the Indian Army said temporary structures erected by the Chinese have been dismantled. The disengagement, after a nine-month standoff from the most fractious point in India's Ladakh region, is significant. But it is only a start.
It's a first step. It's a tentative step. But yes, it is aimed at diffusing the tension which exists, and particularly at this spot around Pangong.
Indian Defence Minister Rajnath Singh told Parliament earlier this month that disputes persist along the border known as the Line of Actual Control, or LAC.
There are still some outstanding issues with regard to deployment and patrolling at the LAC. We will focus on these in further discussions.
Talks have started on stepping back from three other friction points along the border in Ladakh. But tensions in the Himalayas are likely to simmer amid growing suspicion in India, which has accused China of border incursions.
The main point is that what did the Chinese hope to achieve by doing what they did? What was their intention? And certainly those will be factors that will be in the minds of the Indian planners, and will ensure that we will be vigilant in future, more vigilant in future for Chinese actions.
Restoring economic ties may be easier. India banned Chinese apps such as TikTok and raised barriers to Chinese investment as military tensions spiked last year. There were growing calls to boycott Chinese goods amid increasing nationalist sentiment. But Chinese goods, from low-cost accessories to mobile phones, continue to flood Indian markets. Many Indian industries, such as pharmaceuticals and solar power, remain dependent on Chinese components. Indian exports to China grew last year.
Indian industry is now looking at China as a market, and China has offered them, India the market. So I think the push is going to be both ways. Earlier, the push was only, from the sectors which were dependent on imports from China. Now there are these sectors like steel and others who are dependent on market in China. So I think there's going to be a substantially large constituency in India which will be seeking normalization of relations with China.
That means political and economic ties between Asia's two biggest countries could move on divergent paths. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Happening now in Asia, protesters gathered in Myanmar's biggest city of Yangon despite the ruling junta's thinly veiled threat to use lethal force if people answered a call for a general strike opposing the military takeover 3 weeks ago. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us here today on VOA Asia. There is political climate change in the air, as the United States has recently officially rejoined the Paris Agreement after the Trump administration abandoned the Global Climate Pact, saying it was too costly for business. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain tells us more.
The White House says the severe winter storm that has caused at least 47 deaths in Texas and a number of other U.S. states this week is the type of extreme weather event that climate change is triggering. Some families without power and water sought refuge in furniture stores and shelters. President Joe Biden said the U.S. can no longer delay joining the fight against climate change.
This is a global existential crisis, and we'll all suffer the consequences if we fail. We have to rapidly accelerate our commitments to aggressively curb our emissions and to hold one another accountable for meeting our goals and increasing our ambitions.
At an event to mark America's rejoining the pact, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the move strengthens the global effort to slow warming.
For the past 4 years, the absence of a key player created a gap in the Paris Agreement, a missing link that weakened the whole. So today, as we mark the United States' re-entry into this treaty, we also recognize its restoration in its entirety and its creators, as its creators intended. Welcome back.
Experts say the appointment of former U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry to be the first ever presidential envoy on climate sends a powerful signal. Kerry pledged the U.S. will redouble its efforts.
We rejoin the international climate effort with humility and with ambition. Humility, knowing that we lost 4 years during which America was absent from the table, but also with ambition, knowing that Paris alone will not do what science tells us we must do together.
Kerry recalled the joy, hope, and excitement at the time the 2015 Paris Agreement was signed by virtually every country in the world. It aims to reduce global greenhouse gas emissions and to limit the planet's average temperature to 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels this century. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello anytime you're online or on your smartphone. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime.
This news from VOA Asia. Thousands of people were being evacuated on the outskirts of Indonesia's capital, Jakarta, amid flooding after a river embankment broke. Rescuers from the National Search and Rescue Agency have been deployed. You'll find all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The United States is reaching a grim statistic, 500,000 deaths from COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. Vaccines and falling infection rates have increasingly given hope that life may soon return to normal. One contentious issue, however, is the reopening of schools. Michelle Quinn reports.
About 40% of U.S. students have the option of in-person instruction 5 days a week, according to Burbio, a technology firm that tracks school reopenings.
There's so much science out there that says that this is hurting kids, millions of kids in America right now that are not getting in-classroom learning every day.
When he took office in January, President Joe Biden, a Democrat, set a goal of reopening kindergarten through eighth grade schools by the end of April. He is asking Congress for $130 billion to improve school facilities, hire more teachers, and make other changes to provide safer classrooms. Some teachers' unions say their members must be vaccinated and other measures taken before they will return to classrooms. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that vaccinating teachers should not be a prerequisite for opening schools, and it sets out other conditions to get a classroom ready for in-person learning. According to the CDC website, cleaning and disinfecting are integral to reducing the spread of COVID-19. Guidelines also say administrators should work with teachers and staff to decide which aspects of cleaning and disinfection will be handled by teachers, teaching staff, and custodial staff. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
U.S. President Joe Biden pledged $4 billion to the World Health Organization's COVAX plan, which is designed to help provide COVID-19 vaccines for 92 low- and middle-income economies around the world. During a virtual G7 meeting and the Munich Security Conference, Biden championed U.S. involvement in all international alliances. VOA's Patsy Whitaker-Suara has more.
Good morning to Washington, D.C.,
U.S. President Joe Biden made a virtual appearance before the Munich Security Conference, where his embrace of international alliances marked a reversal of his predecessor's America First foreign policy approach.
America is back. I speak today as President of the United States at the very start of my administration, and I'm sending a clear message to the world. America is back. The Transatlantic Alliance is back. And we are not looking backward. We are looking forward together.
Biden outlined his administration's plans for addressing one of the world's most pressing challenges, the coronavirus pandemic, by committing funding to COVAX, the global initiative aimed at ensuring equitable access to the COVID-19 vaccine.
Today, I'm announcing that the United States is making a $2 billion pledge to COVAX, with the promise of an additional $2 billion to urge others to step up as well.
COVAX tries to address global vaccine inequality as wealthy countries build up stockpiles for their own populations.
That's where COVAX has stepped in to really speak and negotiate on behalf of the countries who aren't able to do that and to develop that really as a portfolio of vaccines. So in a way, it gives all countries a seat at the table through COVAX.
To meet its target to deliver 2 billion doses to people in 92 lower-income countries by the end of 2021, COVAX will need to address not only the current lack of supply, but funding. COVAX said it needs $4.9 billion in addition to the $2.1 billion it has already raised. In a statement, the White House said that initial $2 billion comes from the $4 billion already appropriated by Congress in December for Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, one of the co-leaders of COVAX. The rest will be allocated over the next 2 years once other countries have donated as well. More than 190 countries have agreed to participate in COVAX. The Trump administration had opted out, in part because of the former president's decision to pull the United States out of the World Health Organization, claiming it was corrupt and unduly influenced by China. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, as mass vaccinations for COVID-19 are being rolled out across Beijing, residents between the ages of 18 to 59 are lining up to receive the inoculation for free. About 60 medical workers from the Beijing Rehabilitation Hospital have been dispatched to the temporary site. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, diamond cloning is said to be a vocation, an art form, and a rare skill. New York artist John Hattelberg creates precise reproductions of famous diamonds, but one copy became his life's work, the blue diamond of the French crown. Vladimir Lensky has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
A reproduction of Botswana's famed Okavango blue diamond is just one of artist John Hattelberg's works. This one displayed in New York City's Diamond District. But one especially precious to Hattelberg will be shown at the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C., a reproduction of the legendary blue diamond of the French crown. The artist says this is what the gem looked like until mid-19th century, before it disappeared and later re-emerged as the iconic Hope Diamond.
So what I'm going to show you, this diamond is one of the few conceptual gem cuts I've ever seen in my life. And it's really kind of astounding. Louis XIV, known as the Sun King, his colors were blue and gold. He has this blue diamond, and he wants this to really represent his power.
The stone's biography stretches through five centuries. In the 17th century, a giant 115-carat stone was brought to France from India. It was cut for Louis XIV when it became known as the Blue French Crown Diamond. Since then, it's been recut many times to suit the taste of its new owners. It would have taken years to recreate the famous stone, but employees of the Louvre Museum in Paris happened to find two cast iron molds of the diamond, ordered by Louis XIV himself.
It can't be extremely brilliant because the light goes right through it. They made a sun, a seven-rayed sun in the back of this, and they set it in gold. And because the light goes right through the center of it, it's dead in the center, essentially, it reflected that seven-rayed gold sun. So there he was, Louis XIV, the sun god, with his blue diamond with the gold sun radiating out from it.
Hetleberg says getting the shape right was one challenge, but getting the color right was the toughest part. He got help from a Minnesota company that uses a technique of spattering nanoparticles.
If you take a thin sheet of gold leaf and hold it up to a strong light, the color coming through it doesn't transmit gold color, it transmits blue.
That's amazing.
So the precious metal part of it is gold, essentially. The nanodot, we all know what nanodots are now, so just very small particles of gold. And the physical vapor part, physical vapor just means cloud. So you have this nanodot gold cloud that's deposited on the back of these replicas.
Hetleberg first used this technology in 2010 to replicate the Hope Diamond itself at the Smithsonian Institution. Once the Smithsonian reopens after the coronavirus pandemic comes to an end, it will feature an earlier version of the Hope Diamond, a new starring gem called the Blue Diamond of the French Crown. For Vladimir Lensky in New York, NRI's VOA News.
What, might you ask, would prompt a person to run 880 kilometers for a person he met on Facebook? Maxim Moskalkov met two people who can explain.
Since 2015, Tara Zier, a successful dentist from Washington, D.C., had been trying to discover what was causing her shortness of breath, fatigue, difficulty walking, and excruciating back pain. The symptoms struck not long after her husband's death.
At that point, I was feeling an enormous amount of stress from that event and was extremely worried about my children. They were grieving. I was grieving.
After consulting with endocrinologist, psychiatrist, rheumatologist, cardiologist, and a myriad of other doctors, she still didn't know what was happening, and her symptoms were getting worse.
I could barely get off the couch. I couldn't take care of my kids. My in-laws actually moved in with me. I had to hire someone to live with me.
Finally, in 2017, Zier found a neurologist who diagnosed her with stiff person syndrome, a rare neurological disorder with features of an autoimmune disease. There is no treatment, only eliminating the symptoms. Only one person in a million suffers from the syndrome.
It takes on average 7 years to diagnose. Seven. Like, it's insane. And that's because it's often misdiagnosed as multiple sclerosis, MS, Parkinson's, psychological disorders.
Tara went through a few rehabilitation courses in Mayo Clinic, which has improved her life considerably. Meanwhile, halfway around the world in Australia and Tasmania, ultra-distance runner Shane James, nicknamed the Tasmanian Devil, knows those symptoms well. He suffers from the same condition.
You feel that drained or you're in that much pain, and it's just such a grind where it's 24/7, day in, day out, and you live with it, and you know that you're going to live with it the rest of your life.
Tara fought back by writing a book and founding Stiff Person Syndrome Research Foundation, a nonprofit organization that raises funds to study the disease. She has managed to collect enough to finance the first research on the illness at Johns Hopkins University.
My role in this really is to take that seven-year number and squeeze that down, and so people can get diagnosed properly. It's given me purpose.
James has been hoping all his life that someone would start to research the syndrome and met Tara through Facebook. So he decided to help her foundation and draw attention to the syndrome by running 880 kilometers through Tasmania.
You've really got a choice. It's up to you. And my choice was to fight and really fight damn hard. I mean, the hardest that I still, you can't imagine how hard you have to really fight. And then you keep going.
What you've been able to do, it's unbelievable to me. And I'm forever grateful for you for doing this.
It took James 3 weeks to run the 880 kilometers. And the $20,000 he raised were passed to Zier's Foundation to fund research on the syndrome. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
As our program draws to a close, we continue online on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Just look us up under our name, VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.